Two Avengers for the Price of One, a Daredevil and the Avengers fic, written by Marv with a V and read by 42 Do Not Panic. This fic is rated for teen and up audiences. Summary. Thanks to Fodley's meddling, Matt finds himself stuck with an Avenger pen pal or two. Little does he know, it's the best thing that has ever or will ever happen to him. Matt. He wasn't going to sleep tonight. He knew that for a fact as he ascended the stairs to his apartment, taking step after weary step, feeling every individual ache as he moved until he felt like his entire body was throbbing, every part of it united in pain. He ached all over, and a walk had done nothing to clear his head. His heart jolted more than beat in his chest, every echo through his chambers feeling hollow and empty to him. Electro was dead. Stick was gone again. He owed his life to Frank Castle. Karen knew his secret, and it was hilarious in a twisted kind of way that he told her the truth after all this time and immediately followed it up with a lie, the biggest he'd ever told. I'm gonna leave Daredevil behind. Was he? As soon as he said those words, he doubted the truth of them. They wouldn't stand the test of time. He'd try, of course. He'd try to keep his words, only to ultimately fail. Foggy's departure from Nelson and Murdoch was proof of that. It was proof that he wasn't enough to keep the ones he cared about close. But was Foggy's distance because of Daredevil or because of Matt himself? He knew the answer. It was him. It always had been. People had walked away from him his whole life. Dad, Stick, Elektra, now Foggy. Karen was next. She was just too decent to say so. She was right, though. Daredevil was an addiction. But he didn't want to recover. He laughed silently and bitterly as he made his way down the corridor to his apartment. He already knew that it wasn't empty. He could smell him from the corridor where he'd brushed against the wall. His breath lingered in the air, the smell and the taste of Belgian chocolate and fresh coffee announcing his vices and his presence. Foggy was waiting for him. What that signified, Matt couldn't begin to guess. One-man intervention, perhaps? He turned the door handle, knowing already that it wouldn't be locked. Foggy could have done that. He could have secured the apartment while he waited, but he hadn't. He never did. Foggy wasn't afraid of the dark corners of Hell's Kitchen, and the lecture on safety that Matt gave him would make a difference. He opened the door and stepped inside with a weary sigh, sensing that Foggy was about to take him to the woodshed. He deserved it. He let him down repeatedly, so Foggy walked. In a circle, evidently. He couldn't understand why he'd come back, unless there was some further disappointment in him that his friend needed to express. He shut the door behind himself and walked down the long entryway, removing his glasses, setting the wire frames on the kitchen counter, and proceeding to fold his cane. He dropped that on a chair at the small dining table and collapsed in the empty chair right beside it. He'd had about all he could take. If everyone in his life was going to find him lacking in every area but secrets, he wished they'd just walk already and get it over with, rather than drying it out. It was agony, soul-crushing and destroying in a way that was worse than any injury he'd ever endured. "What are you doing here, Foggy?" he asked tiredly, listening to the leather of the couch stretch and squeak as Foggy jumped, apparently started by the question. "Have I ever been able to sneak up on you or surprise you?" Foggy asked after a moment's tense silence. Matt smiled and said simply, "No." "Not even that surprise party in college that I planned for a month?" Foggy asked with a disappointed air. Matt grinned guiltily and tipped his head back until his neck popped. "Not even then." "Is that why you're here, Fogg? To discuss stealth techniques?" "No." "Yeah," he said, his tone turning serious. "Karen told me you quit." Matt's irritation flared at those words. The inherent judgment in them was just a little too much to take right now. There was no hiding his feelings about it either. He'd taken his glasses off. His anger was exposed, and for the first time, Matt didn't care if Foggy saw it. He didn't care if he caught a glimpse of the real Matthew Murdoch, who was angry at the world and who had just about enough of everyone walking out of his life once they realized he was so much more than his disability made him. Maybe he should have gone with Stick, he reflected. They could be bitter and disillusioned together. "You quit first," he stated with enough snap in his tone that he could practically feel Foggy squirm. Foggy sighed. "Not that. Daredevil." You're quitting? Matt shook his head wearily. I don't know. Yeah. Yes, I think. Why? Foggy demanded, his tone incredulous. Foggy, Matt muttered, biting his lip. He didn't want to have this conversation again, only in reverse this time. Once upon a time, he'd lain on the couch Foggy currently occupied, and he'd tried to justify Daredevil to him. It wasn't fair for that situation to be flipped on its head, for him to have to justify not being Daredevil now, when he was trying to cling desperately to the two people he had left in his life, both of whom were one disappointment away from walking away permanently. No, come on. I want to know why. Foggy insisted, moving to stand behind his chair, probably so that Matt couldn't push it back, get up, and walk away. It was annoying to be cornered by Foggy Nelson in his own apartment, even if Matt would never admit it. Do you want to know why? Matt said bitterly. Because Fist killed an innocent old woman to get to Daredevil. Because Frank killed Grotto to prove a point to me personally. Because every life Frank takes, you didn't invent revenge, Matt. Foggy declared as Matt sighed defeatedly. It's on me, he admitted guiltily. Grotto, the gangs, the shootings. Frank does what I do, only with less restraint. He's a copycat. Say that to his face, I dare you. Foggy muttered as Matt gave a humorless smile. Karen was right. Maybe he shouldn't judge Frank, especially as someone who now owed his life to the serial killer. He shook his head. He was not looking forward to paying that debt. The thought of the kinds of favors Frank was likely to call in on some future date was the stuff of nightmares, and he quickly pushed those thoughts to the back of his mind where he wouldn't have to think about them. I'm just saying, he said with an air of finality. Violence never ends. I've lost so much to it. Your friendship, Karen, Elektra. Foggy said quietly yet resolutely, clearly determined to talk the matter through. If you're going to quit, at least be honest about why. Matt sighed heavily and slumped in his chair. Yeah, Elektra. She died in my arms, Foggy. I don't want you to quit, Foggy admitted, and Matt's head snapped up. He was so startled and confused by that statement that he didn't know where to even begin dissecting it. It was impossible to understand. He frowned and shook his head, then blinked rapidly, to no avail. He had no greater clarity about it than when Foggy initially uttered those words. Foggy, you hate this stuff, he declared, sweating a hand over his face in an attempt to clear the migraine he could feel building in his temples. You hate secrets and lies and picking me off of rooftops when I've been shot and trying to hold my skin together when immortal ninjas carved me up. You hate it. Secrets, Daredevil, not you. I don't hate you, Foggy said with a barely stifled sob. Matt sighed as he fought back tears and emotions of his own. You're starting to. I'm not, Foggy said emphatically. And if you quit, I think you'd be lost, and yeah. I hate finding you when you're hurt. Not because I don't want to help, but because I hate it when you get hurt. There are other people out there who do what you do, though. Who do it better, maybe because they have a team. They have support. Matt stifled a groan. Please tell me you're not going where I think you're going with this. It was no secret that the Avengers had taken up residence in New York City. Foggy had even run into Captain America on his morning coffee run once and was elated when the guy apparently told him he could just call him Steve. This, of course, put Foggy on a first-name basis with freaking Captain America, man, which was the hell of a name drop Foggy abused at every opportunity. A while back, I put your name down for a competition, Foggy admitted, and Matt closed his eyes for a moment, absolutely mortified. You didn't. He mumbled, unsure whether the sudden flutter in Foggy's heartbeat was due to falsehood or apprehension of his reaction. I did, Foggy confirmed, and Matt groaned, more at the realization that Foggy wasn't lying than anything. I figured, what's the harm? He probably won't win anyway, and an Avenger pen pal for a year, how cute is that? Matt grimaced and said tentatively, I won? You did, Foggy agreed almost sympathetically. Matt cast around for an objection and found one almost immediately. I don't write letters. But Foggy was having none of it. You do know. Letters, care packages, phone calls, starting tomorrow. Matt groaned and buried his head in his hands, embarrassment announcing itself in the form of heat flooding his cheeks. Foggy gave a low chuckle and patted his shoulder, which was the closest thing to an apology Matt was likely to get from him for meddling in his life and making him look like some kind of Avenger fanboy. "Who'd I get?" he mumbled, lowering his hands and raising his head, his dread rising. "Not Steve, which I am very disappointed about," Foggy admitted with a dramatic sigh. Matt's lips twitched. "I'll bet." "You got Hawkeye and the Winter Soldier," Foggy informed him as Matt gave a stiff nod. "Apparently, it's a package deal. 2 Avengers for the price of 1. All proceeds for ticket entries go to Sokovian charities." Matt frowned and decided he wasn't going to ask Foggy how many tickets he'd bought to ensure he won. Instead, he asked, "What do I have to do?" "Nothing yet," Foggy quickly reassured him. "They'll get in touch first, and you just reply. They'll send pictures, postcards, Bucky Bears, whatever." Matt groaned. "Foggy." Letters and phone calls weren't a problem. He could scan a letter into any device, phone, tablet, or computer, and it was fine. He could read it in that format with his screen reader or braille display. Assistive technology had been designed for this, for a time when letter writing was more prevalent than it was these days. A dying art, it was called, but that wasn't going to get him out of it, as Foggy had made abundantly clear. He just wasn't sure what he was going to do with Avenger vacation snaps or autographs. "I know that visual kind of stuff isn't your thing," said Foggy with his usual amount of tact. "But I'll describe whatever they send to you, and these guys are vigilantes too. Maybe it'll lead to something real, real friendship and real support if you give them a chance." "And if I don't?" Matt said stubbornly, mostly just because he could, since Foggy had thrown him into the deep end with this, well-intentioned as it might be. "You're contractually obliged," Foggy said in the smuggest of tones. "I didn't sign anything," Matt quickly countered. Foggy laughed guiltily. "I did, and we both know you won't send me to prison for fraud, so..." "Then make contact tomorrow. Do me a favor, no, do yourself a favor and pick up the phone, okay?" "Fine," Matt reluctantly agreed. "And Daredevil?" Foggy sighed and rested a hand gently on his shoulder. "If you need to take some time to think about it and process everything, I get it, and I actually support that. I just don't want you to give it up out of guilt, because I think it'll mess with your head, Matt. Whatever else that happens, you're my best friend, and I want to keep you in my life for as long as possible, okay?" "Okay, Foggy," Matt whispered, his voice almost failing him as Foggy leaned down and hugged him. He closed his eyes and basked in the reassurance of old Foggy's warmth, the smell of chocolate and coffee washing over him, comforting him. Even with everything that had happened, Foggy was still here, still searching out ways to show his support, and Matt loved him for it. He was the best friend he could ever have asked for. Clint. He woke to the smell of gently stewing fruit, blackcurrant and plum, if he wasn't mistaken. It was just like Bucky to be up with the birds, making jam on his day off. His boyfriend was still deep in recovery mode, relearning a little something Clint liked to call freedom. It was something Bucky hadn't had in a very long time. The freedom to make his own choices, to do what he wanted because he felt like it. Sometimes that meant staying in bed when Steve and Sam went out running. Other times it meant adopting a kitten he found trapped in a dumpster or writing a notebook when talk therapy just wasn't working for him. There was no one path to healing or just one kind of therapy that worked for Bucky. In the same way, he didn't have just one hobby or one way of expressing himself. Bucky's outlets were as varied and multifaceted as the man himself. Clint tried to encourage that. Bucky had believed he was only one thing for a very long time. Soldat. The daily glimpses Clint caught of a more varied, colorful, and complicated man were rewarding. He was in love with that man. Fortunately, he was one of few Avengers who didn't have a complicated history with him. Bruce, Thor, and Wanda being the other exceptions. For Tony, Sam, Natasha, and Steve, they were still figuring out how to talk to him, how to put the past to bed and see, not Bucky before, but Bucky as he was now. Clint saw that Bucky. He was the only Bucky he'd ever seen or known, and for that fact alone, he felt that he had it easier. Then there was the fact that he'd fallen in love with him, not quickly, but little by little, as more pieces of Bucky were revealed over time. It was a slow road, getting here, and a hard one because he thought he was alone in his deepening feelings, but he wasn't. True to form, Bucky didn't tell him. He showed him instead. He gave him a notebook one day in the gym, kissed his cheek, and left Flynn to blush and to read the notebook. Some of the memories contained in its pages, he already knew. After all, he'd been there the first time he comforted Bucky after a nightmare, and the time Tony accused Bucky and Steve of colluding during a game of Monopoly. But there were also things he didn't know that reading from Bucky's point of view made him see for the first time. Like that Bucky remembered the first time they met, and that it was important to him. Like that Bucky missed him when he went on that undercover mission with Natasha for 8 weeks. Like that Bucky loved him. Like that apart from Steve, he was the most important person in the world to him. 6 months on from that night, Bucky had given him that notebook and admitted his feelings in plain words, Flynn would honestly say that he didn't regret reciprocating and opening himself up to him. Bucky had very quickly become the center of his life. There was something not all the Avengers liked, Steve and Natasha in particular. Steve, because he was protective of Bucky, and Natasha, because she was protective of her best friend and mission partner. Both of them had relaxed somewhat after the past few months. Bucky was very much his own person these days, a soft person, who was gentler than his reputation indicated. Flynn was more in love with him now than he'd ever been before, and other people were starting to see that softer side of Bucky too. It was Bucky's idea, of course, to launch the Pen Pal program as a means to raise funds for disaster relief for the citizens of Sokovia. Tony wanted to fix everything with a multi-million-dollar donation from Stark Industries, but Flynn had to admit Bucky's idea was better. Getting the team to engage with members of the public, with letters and care packages being sent back and forth between the half dozen winners and the wounded Avengers who had been subjected to more bad press than ever before after the Sokovian disaster, was good for all of them. They'd raised millions of dollars for Sokovians who had lost everything. The public was embracing the Avengers, with their humanity being showcased in photos and videos of letters and packages being opened, their content displayed for the world to see on just about every social media platform. It was healing in some small way. Bucky was convinced that people would be disappointed if they gained the Winter Soldier as a pen pal rather than one of the more well-known Avengers. Flynn didn't believe that was true, but he agreed to share the responsibility of joint pen palship with Bucky anyway, to put his boyfriend's mind at ease. Bucky needn't have worried, not that Flynn was about to say, "I told you so," even if it would have been a little satisfying. He was convinced that he and Bucky had gotten lucky with their winner, a Mr. Murdoch from Hell's Kitchen, who had been quick to explain that he was, 1, blind, and 2, had been strong-armed into the program by his friend Foggy. Communication with Matt were short and stilted at first, not for lack of trying to accommodate him, but because Matt was hesitant to reveal much about himself. The more reticent he was, the more determined Bucky became to find a way to make the program enjoyable for him, even going so far as to obtain a Braille stylus and special paper, teaching himself how to read and write Braille and painstakingly writing every single letter in a format that was easy for Matt to read. After a month of consistent effort on Bucky's part and frequent encouragement from Clint, who wanted Bucky's effort to be rewarded as well as to get to know Matt, the lawyer started to reveal little pieces of himself. That slow unveiling endeared him to Clint, who had come to know and love Bucky in a similar way, gradually. Matt moved slower than a turtle on a beach, but he did let some pieces of himself show. First came the package of coffee that was sold exclusively at Matt's favorite coffee shop in Hell's Kitchen. Then came the model kit of a Beechcraft Model 18 plane that was reminiscent of Bucky's war days and arrived on the former assassin's birthday, which was clearly intended especially for him as a thank you. Bucky didn't stop smiling that day and wrote a profuse thank you note to Matt in Braille, blushing the whole time. It was at that point that Clint started to wonder if Bucky could possibly be wooed by Matt Murdock, which he wouldn't have minded. He was open to sharing Bucky. There was nothing he wanted more for him than to be loved as completely as it was possible to be, whether that love come from one partner, or two, or even three. Matt tended not to write long letters. Short, printed notes accompanied gifts he would send from time to time, explaining the significance of each one, whether it was a bottle of wine purchased at Matt's favorite bar, Josie's, or a box of scented candles he'd made himself because it was a hobby that engaged both his more tactile senses and a sense of smell and was therefore enjoyable for him. The fact that Matt shared that enjoyment and that love of things crafted by his own hands with himself and Bucky touched Clint deeply. Matt was letting him and Bucky know him in a language he chose, through a medium of gift-giving. Those lavender and mint and orange and peach scented candles were a very tangible reminder of Matt's presence in their life whenever they were lit, especially on date night when Clint would look at Bucky and wonder which of them was the reason for that sweet little smile. The morning he woke up to the smell of blackcurrant and plum, he wandered into the kitchen to find Bucky making jam from a recipe Matt had sent that came from a Mrs. Anna Nelson, who was the closest thing to a mother Matt had ever known, having been orphaned a few short years after losing his vision. Then skimmed the recipe with a smile as he wrapped both arms around Bucky's waist and nestled his chin on his boyfriend's broad shoulder. That was Bucky. Big everything. Big hands, shoulders, and smile, big heart, soul, and love. Bucky had a heart big enough for two people to fit comfortably, and when he finally met Matt Murdock in person, Clint was sure that big heart would make itself known. It had been a gradual softening on Matt's part, but Bucky had him wrapped around his little finger now, and he didn't doubt that when the question was asked eventually, he'd say yes. Yes to sharing Bucky's heart with the lawyer from Hell's Kitchen.
Matt. It had been a hellish few days, and he knew in his gut that it wasn't over yet, nor was it just the beginning. It was ending, coming to a dangerous tipping point. The hand held all the cards, or almost all. They had everything they needed, Danny and Elektra included. New York City was a sitting duck, and he was running out of time. It seemed cruel that it should end this way, with him being held in a police station, unable to explain or help prevent the destruction that would radiate from Midland Circle, pulling the city under. Defeat tasted bitter in his mouth, seasoned as it was with a complex form of grief. Stick was dead, and Elektra wasn't. She was lost, almost completely unrecognizable. Almost. She could come back from all of this, right? If he didn't believe in the power of redemption, then he didn't believe in anything at all. She needed him. He owed her his life, and he sensed that a time was coming when the scales would be balanced between them at last. He couldn't sit here and do nothing. Days that he still felt after being knocked unconscious by Elektra, but neither could he throw his life away in this fight with her hand. He'd found something these last few months, and he had to wonder, not if it was possible, but if it was wise to fall in love with someone he'd never met. How could he know for sure that it was real and sincere? Well, he had it in writing, for one thing, which any lawyer could tell you was pretty incontrovertible proof. It was just that he'd never felt this way before, and that he'd never loved. There were lots of people he loved. Foggy, Karen, Ed, Anna, Theo, Candace, Claire, Father Lantum, Hell, Frank too on some level. But to be in love? Well, that was something entirely different. He liked Clint. He was even prepared to say that he loved him on a platonic level. He admired him. Clint was introverted like Matt himself. He was grounded, logical, and good-natured, the kind of person it was easy to like. But Bucky? Him, he loved. Bucky was perhaps even more introverted than Clint, distant and self-contained in a way that made Matt feel like he was always reaching for him, trying to pull him closer in all those letters, notes, and packages. The man came across as resilient and headstrong, soft and sweet as so many of his letters were. Bucky never tried to charm him. He was honest to a fault, and it was that honesty that was so refreshing. Bucky never even attempted to come across as anything he wasn't, and Matt had chatted more with him than he had with anyone except Foggy. While he'd been manipulated by people like Stick and Elektra, Bucky had been controlled and remade many times over. He never tried to hide that fact, to pretend that everything was rosy all the time. Bucky was very much someone who was testing his value in the world, finding where he fit and was accepted. Matt strove for years to prove his value to people like Stick, but also to every person who pitied him for his blindness. Graduating summa cum laude from Columbia hadn't been a choice. It had been a necessity, a means of proving his worth. To know and connect with someone who shared that experience, who knew what it was for people to look at him and see only brokenness, was something Matt had never experienced before. It was addictive, being understood and acknowledged as entirely capable, to have someone ask him, not about life as a blind person, or about the accident that took his sight, but about life as Matt Murdock, about what gave him pleasure, what made him smile, what gave his life meaning and joy, what songs he held deeply and listened to again and again, what people and stories and experiences were most important to him. He felt seen by Bucky. For that, he loved him. It was impossible not to. He told Foggy once in college about the trifecta of attraction for him, which quite obviously was not about how someone looked, as opposed to most other people on campus back then who only cared about who was hot or total babe, in Foggy's words. Stimulating conversations, respect, and common ground were the trifecta of qualities he sought out in a potential partner, though most people had only ever managed to be one thing on that list. Electra was an intriguing conversationalist, whatever else she might have appeared to Foggy, and he had enjoyed respect and common ground in both Claire and Karen. In Becky, he found all three of these qualities that he enjoyed, and several dozen more. He loved him. So when Foggy came to check on him at the police station later that night and brought him two things, the Daredevil suit and a package addressed to Becky that he hadn't mailed yet, he knew he had to make a choice. In a perfect world, he'd have both those things, the Devil and Becky. In this world, he gave the package to Foggy and asked him to take it to the post office for him as a favor between friends. And he put on the Daredevil suit for the first time in many months because, while his heart belonged to Becky, his loyalty belonged to his city in this hour of direst need. There would be time afterward to confess his deepest held thoughts and feelings to Becky, not in a letter, but in person and in every loving stitch of the blanket he'd crocheted for him and entrusted to Foggy. There was still time. Becky. It had been a lonely 2 weeks for him. I'd sent him a beautiful blanket crocheted in soft, almost pastel shades of green, gray, and yellow, reminiscent of the mild weather they were having, typical of New York in spring. Becky sent him back a thank you note and an invitation for Matt to meet up with him and Clint at the coffee shop Matt liked. And then, nothing. There had been no word from Matt, and it had been 2 weeks. Becky was done lying to himself about the reason for Matt's radio silence. At first, he told himself that Matt was just busy. Then he told himself that Matt was afraid to offend him by rejecting him or that he'd gone out of town for a conference of some kind. Clint actually was out of town on yet another mission with the team, so there was nobody to stop Becky from staking out places he knew Matt frequented, like his apartment, Clinton Church, Josie's, and Fogwell's. But Matt never showed up at any of those places. He rang the offices of Hogarth, Chow, and Benowich, where he knew Matt's friend Foggy worked. He was hoping to speak to him, just to reassure himself that Matt was okay, but then a secretary informed him that Foggy was on a personal leave and nobody knew when he'd be back. Becky had the phone in his hand for a long moment after the call disconnected. Something was wrong. He knew it in his gut. Foggy was unreachable, and Matt wouldn't just leave like this. He knew he wouldn't. It was a fair argument that he wouldn't know everything about Matt, only the parts of him that Matt chose to reveal in letters and little presents. But he did feel like he knew at least two things about him. One, Matt wasn't a coward. He wouldn't just run away without a word to anyone. And two, Matt loved Hell's Kitchen. He wouldn't leave unless he had no other choice. He sighed and requested that Friday run immediate checks on CCTV and traffic cams in Hell's Kitchen, analyzing footage that spent the past 2 weeks searching for Matt. The more footage Friday pulled up and the more Becky studied it, the greater his concern for Matt became. He had almost decided to go find answers himself when the door to the suite of rooms he shared at the compound with Clint opened to admit his boyfriend. Clint dropped his duffel bag in the doorway and moved immediately to hug him. "Guess who's back from Mexico? Miss me?" "I always do," Becky said with a sigh, frowning as he pulled away from him, the phone still clutching tightly in his hands. "You still haven't heard from him?" Clint said quietly, perceptive and understanding as always. "No," Becky admitted, shaking his head and reaching to lock the tablet he'd been using to review security footage. It wasn't that he wanted to hide it from Clint necessarily, he just didn't know what to make of it yet. He didn't want to jump to conclusions without giving Matt a chance to explain. He also didn't want to admit how much Matt's sudden absence affected him, because he was worried that Clint could take it the wrong way. "Buck, maybe he just needs time," Clint said gently, leading him over to the sofa and pulling him down onto it to sit beside him. Becky shook his head. "It's not that." "Isn't it? I'm deaf, not blind, you know," Clint reminded him, tapping his SI prototype hearing aid. Becky sighed. "I know." "You love him," Clint said, like it was really that simple. Becky shook his head doubtfully. "I don't know him well enough for that." "I love you, Clint." Clint smiled and said warmly, "I know you do, but I don't think I'm wrong about this. Nobody said it has to be either or, him or me. Why can't it be him and me?" Bucky ducked his head as he considered that, fighting the smile that tugged at the corner of his mouth. That was so like him. He could help but think. It was generous and accepting and exactly the kind of arrangement he would never have assumed was an option without Clint's say-so. He reached for his boyfriend's hand and took it, moved and grateful almost beyond words. "You'd be okay with that?" he asked tentatively. Clint gave a solemn nod. "If Matt is, and if you are." Bucky's smile faded and he sighed. "Well, it's a moot point anyway, because he's disappeared off the face of the earth." Clint rolled his eyes. "You're so dramatic." "I'm not being dramatic, Clint," Bucky insisted, frowning at him. "I checked. I even have Friday run through hours of CCTV footage and traffic cams. Matt was taken into police custody 2 weeks ago and then nothing." Clint frowned too. "Police custody? What did he do?" Bucky sighed and shrugged. "The cops think he might have witnessed a murder or know something about it. He disappeared from the station before they could interview him, along with his client and an ex-con." "Yeah, that doesn't sound dodgy at all," Clint muttered sarcastically. He leaned back against the soft cushions of the sofa and gave a weary sigh. Bucky almost felt guilty for dropping all of this in his lap the minute he got home, when Clint had probably been looking forward to winding down with a pizza and a few beers, rather than joining Bucky in obsessing over his missing pen pal. Nevertheless, he continued. "I checked police reports for that night to see if anything happened that would give us a clue." "And?" Clint prompted gently. Bucky shrugged. "Two reports of theft, a couple of homicides, any number of traffic incidents, and one report of property damage. Oh well, destruction. A high-rise got leveled out of the blue. Midland Circle, it was called." Clint looked doubtful. "You don't know if Matt was even there, Buck." "His client was," Bucky insisted, refusing to back down. "Jessica Jones. I looked into her. She's a PI." "So?" Clint said impatiently, stifling a yawn behind his hand. "Call her. Ask her if she knows where Matt is. She might be able to help us find him, Bucky." "She won't tell us anything," Bucky said defeatedly, leaning against Clint with a sigh. Clint gave him a gentle nudge. "You seriously underestimate your charm. And mine." "Okay. You do it then. Please?" Bucky pleaded, passing his phone to Clint. The usher took it with a grin and curled an arm around Bucky's shoulders, leaning in and kissing him soundly, which he supposed was surprised of asking Clint to make the call. He couldn't say he minded, and he sighed when Clint broke his kiss and pulled back, raising the phone to his face instead and beginning to search Google for Jessica Jones' contact information. Clint set the phone on speaker, the dial tone ringing 6 times before it was answered. "Alias Investigations. What do you want?" "Jessica Jones?" Clint said uncertainly. "My name's Clint Barton. I don't care who you are. What do you want?" Jessica repeated as Bucky sighed. It wasn't going well. Clint cleared his throat and said quickly, "We have a mutual friend. I'm looking for him. But I could use your help." "So, what do you know about Matt Murdock's disappearance?" "Go to hell," Jessica snapped, hanging up almost immediately. Clint grimaced and lowered the phone, but Bucky hadn't really expected anything different. Something happened to Matt that night, and his client knew what it was. She would never tell either of them what they wanted to know, Matt's whereabouts and whether he was living or dead. Bucky was just going to have to find him some other way. "That went well," he observed, taking the phone back from Clint. "She's hiding something," Clint muttered, frowning. "Matt was there that night. That has to be it, Clint," Bucky insisted, setting his phone on the coffee table and turning worried eyes on his boyfriend. Clint shook his head, unconvinced. "You don't know that, Buck. What was on the security cameras at Midland Circle? Jones and this other guy, Cage, and Daredevil, and a few other people," Bucky muttered, biting his lip. "I couldn't get clear shots of their faces. Daredevil was the only one that went in and didn't make it out before the building came down." "Daredevil," Clint said thoughtfully, giving him a significant look. Bucky froze. "You don't think?" "It's not impossible, Buck," Clint said eagerly, his blue eyes sparkling with sudden hope. "Daredevil disappearing in the same night Matt did, in the same place Matt's client went after disappearing from the police station with him, that's an awful lot of convenient coincidences." Bucky bit back a grin at the realization that 2 coincidences were an awful lot to Clint. He supposed after so many years of international spy games, Clint was maybe a little more suspicious than most. It just didn't come off that way to him. Clint was remarkably open and trusting, all things considered, but Matt wasn't. If Clint was right, he was sitting on a big secret and had been for a while now. Bucky sighed and said tentatively, "Do you think there's any chance he isn't... dead?" Clint curled an arm around his shoulders and said sympathetically, "I don't know, but I hope he's not." "He hasn't been seen since," Bucky said worriedly, a painful lump rising in his throat. Clint shook his head and then kissed the tears from Bucky's cheeks, saying comfortingly, "That doesn't mean he's gone, Buck. Maybe he survived and the cameras went down with the building so they didn't catch whatever happened afterwards." Bucky nodded and snuggled in close, seeking comfort. "What do we do?" Clint paused to consider for a moment, his fingers trailing through Bucky's hair in slow, soothing strokes. Bucky relaxed against him and waited. He knew what Clint's slightly distant expression meant. He was thinking of a plan. If Matt's life could be at all saved, Bucky wanted to try. "Okay," Clint said, nodding and seeming to come to the decision. "You go get Thor, Bruce, and Steve. I'll grab Nat, Wanda, and Tony if I can get him out of the workshop. We'll go to Midland Circle. It's ground zero. Matt has to be there somewhere, or close by. Probably hurt, hopefully alive." "We go there, and then what, Clint?" Bucky asked, trying not to let himself hope. Clint squeezed his shoulder and said grimly, "Say a prayer, and start digging." Bucky's bottom lip trembled, and he said, "What if he's..." Clint cut him off with a look and murmured, "Even if the worst happened, I'll be there, okay?" Bucky swallowed hard and nodded. He drew a ragged breath and let it out slowly as Clint stood and gently drew him to his feet and into his arms. The hug was needed. Bucky felt stronger for it as he and Clint left to summon the other Avengers and hope that Matt Murdock would be found before it was too late. "Matt." He struggled to open his eyes. Not that it would have helped bring him any clarity about his surroundings. It was a force of habit, he supposed, even after so long a time. His eyelids felt heavy, not with fatigue, though he could feel that sunk deep in his bones and muscles into every fiber of his being. It was dust. Dust and blood. A gentle hand dragged a damp cotton cloth against his skin, smoothing away the dirt and blood where it lay caked against his skin. Matt wheezed more than breathed, a familiar dull ache spreading through his side as he clawed towards consciousness. The pain of broken ribs was familiar. It was soon paired with other, sharper pains in his hip, his back, his head, and his heart. Electra. That pain was both old and achingly new. He forced it down his search for consciousness and clarity. There were more pressing matters to consider, like that someone was touching him, tending to his injuries, and he didn't know anything about them. He strained to hear, only tinny echoes returning to him. He'd lost that deeper, richer volume, the gift that was discerning heartbeats. That was a serious blow, and wetness trickled down the side of his face that he could neither smell nor taste. There was only ash in his nostrils and blood in his mouth. It was trauma-related. He understood that much faster than he comprehended the fact that what was trickling down his face wasn't water from a cotton cloth, but tears. The calloused edge of a broad thumb brushed against his cheek, wiping away tear tracks mired in dust. But Matt's eyes snapped open with the shock of that familiar and yet foreign familiarity, and his hand shot out, closing around the wrist of his abductor or savior. He didn't know which the person was. A single, hoarse word escaped his cracked and dry lips. "Who?" "Bruce," came the surprisingly warm reply. "I'm a friend of Bucky's." Bucky. Matt's grip on Bruce's wrist relaxed at the familiar name. "Where?" "The Med Bay in the Avengers compound. I figured that's where you're going with that, buddy," a familiar and altogether welcome voice announced. "Foggy," Matt breathed, sighing with relief. Everything in him seemed to unclench and go almost completely lax as he registered the sweet reassurance that was Foggy's presence. Bruce moved back, and Matt allowed it. The man's sudden freedom of movement stemming less from him breaking free of Matt's grip and more from Matt automatically releasing him. Any sense of perceived threat fading with his best friend within touching distance. "I'm here, Matt," Foggy said reassuringly, touching his shoulder gingerly. "And you're dumb lucky to be here too. You have no idea..." "I've got some idea," Matt muttered, his tone grim, his broken ribs reminding him of their presence with a fresh surge of pain. "Yeah, okay, Mats," Foggy said wearily. "Anyway, if Steve hadn't found you..." Matt tipped his head back, sinking deeper into the soft pillows with a groan. "There you go," name dropping again. "Oh, Steve and I are friends now," Peggy said smugly. "Really?" Matt muttered doubtfully. "Yeah," Foggy said casually. "We bonded over coffee and unfortunate attachments to friends who are too stubborn and pig-headed for their own good." "You bonded," Matt repeated, struggling not to smile. "We did," Foggy insisted, lowering his voice as he added. "You really scared me this time, you know? I thought that was it. Capital I, capital T." Matt sighed, unable to bring himself to tell Foggy that he thought the very same thing. He shifted uncomfortably, finding to his discomfort that he couldn't brush it off as a simple mistake like he had once before. It came down to a choice in the end, and he owed Foggy honesty at the very least. "I'm sorry, Foggy," he said, and he meant it. Things escalated. "Yeah, that's one word for it," Foggy muttered as the door slipped open nearby, bringing a whisper of artificially cooled air with it. "Oh, someone's here to see you. Two someones." Foggy retreated a polite distance, allowing someone else to approach Matt's bed. "Hi, Matt. We haven't met yet. I'm Clint." Matt smiled and said warmly, "It's a pleasure. Or it would be in better circumstances." "Smooth," Foggy commented, and Matt blushed. He opened his mouth to say something and froze, hearing a familiar beat that he recognized as his own heartbeat chipping in double time as the cool, metal digits of a bionic prosthetic brushed against his hand. Matt closed his eyes and leaned into the gentle touch, but could have been explained away as accidental even though he knew it wasn't. "Bucky," he breathed, knowing exactly which Avenger now stood beside Clint. "Good guess," Bucky whispered as Matt stifled a groan. Bucky gave a low, amused chuckle and said softly, "We finally meet. Although I've got to say, I feel like I already know you, Matt." "Maybe you do," Matt murmured huskily, feeling strangely breathless in Bucky's presence. "Should we leave you two alone for a minute?" Foggy asked, and Matt could practically hear the smirk in his voice. "You do what you like, but I'm not leaving my boyfriend alone with him. He might forget I exist," Clint said teasingly. "Yeah, right," Bucky muttered as Matt's heart sank upon hearing the word boyfriend. He felt very foolish all of a sudden, and he shifted away from Bucky self-consciously. He didn't know what he'd been thinking, and he silently chided himself for reading something between the lines that didn't exist. He struggled to keep his feelings from showing on his face, a pointless exercise if Bucky's sympathetic sigh was any indication. "Don't misunderstand, Matt," the super soldier said gently. "Clint and I have something of an open relationship. There's room for you too, if you want there to be, that is." Matt frowned. "You're... serious?" "Yeah, he is very serious about you," Clint said with a soft laugh. "What about you?" Matt asked uncertainly. "I'm pretty flexible, Matt," Clint said, his tone easy and relaxed. "If Buck's happy, then you've got my support. Both of you. Take some time, think about it, talk about it, recover." "Yes," Matt said quickly. "Please," he added pleadingly as Bucky gave a low, triumphant hum and leaned down to press the tenderest of kisses to his forehead. "Scooch over for me, sweetheart," Bucky murmured, settling against the side as Matt rolled onto his less painful side and buried his face in Bucky's chest, wishing he could smell the leather jacket that creased his cheek. The mattress dipped as Clint lay down on Bucky's other side and threw an arm over his middle, his rough, calloused fingertips gracing Matt's elbow, offering comfort, support, and acceptance. Everything Matt had craved for years. He let himself be held and comforted, his pain lessening when it was met with so much warmth and mutual trust. "I'm happy for you, buddy," he heard Foggy whisper, and he smiled. "Do you want to grab a drink, Bruce?" "I don't see why not," Bruce replied, sounding pleased by the invitation. "We'll give these three a minute." "An hour," Matt pleaded, burying his nose in Bucky's soft t-shirt. "A lifetime," Bucky promised, making heat climb up Matt's cheeks. "Bring some pizza back with you," Clint called after Bruce and Foggy as Matt stifled a laugh. This was his new normal, and he liked it. He found more than friends, more than family even. What he found while he was snuggled so close to Bucky that he was breathing the same air was love and a place where he belonged more completely than he had anywhere before.
He was home at last, after all these years.